The Angles and the Saxons and so on. The third week we'll be looking at the Middle Ages, the Moyen Âge. In the fourth week, the Protestant Reformation and the Civil War, when the king got executed. And then after that, we will move on to, the period when Britain is the most powerful nation in the world for 150 years, the Industrial Revolution and the Empire. And finally, the Age of Extremes, the 20th century. That will be the last one. Now, if you do the mathematics, you will realise that the last lecture, the Age of Extremes, is after the Easter holidays. Okay? So that's what we're going to do. Welcome. Just get yourself down. Now, you must take notes. Yeah? Si vous êtes allergique aux notes, faites semblant. Ça me rassure. Okay, but you must take notes, otherwise you have no chance at all. And also, I reckon it would be really a good idea to read a history book at the same time. And in the university library, there are two books which I recommend here, one in English and one in French. I know that reading history books in English can be a little bit... I think it's open, isn't it? Can be a little bit difficult when you're young. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. Oh, final thing is that I always put on my teaching blog a series of links and documents to help you. And here is the address. So this is where you will find information. You will also find here information if, which I am not expecting to be ill, but if I am ill, this is where you will find out my temperature and all the important bits of information you need. Okay, I'm going to show you pictures as well, because they told me that first years need pictures, or they won't listen. So I'm showing you pictures as well. There is a picture. So today, Roman Britain. Obviously, we've started here with somewhere earlier on than Roman Britain. This is the oldest monument in Britain. It is 4,000 years old. And it's one of the most impressive in Europe. And what's impressive about it is not just that it is big, but that the stones, we know where the stones came from, and it is 200 miles away, 300 kilometres. They moved the stones 300 kilometres. We don't know how. Yeah. So it's a very, very impressive thing for them to do 4,000 years ago. The very first humans in Britain are much, much older than that. They are half a million years ago. But the oldest village which we have found from the Stone Age goes back about 10,000 years. This one is about 6,000 years old, this henge. We don't even know why they did it, but we assume it's for some religious reason. The next big civilization in Britain is about 4,000 years ago. People who came from Germany. It wasn't called Germany at the time, but from the area around the Rhine, around the river. And we often call them beaker folk because of the specific pottery which they produced, which is a form of a beaker, which is like a glass for drinking lemonade with. I don't think they had lemonade. And only about 700 years before Jesus Christ, you have the arrival of the Celts. You have the arrival of the Celts. Okay. About 700 years before Jesus Christ. In English, we say BC and AD. In French, you say avant Jésus-Christ, après Jésus-Christ. In English, this is BC, before Christ, AD, Anno Domini. It's in Latin. Go find it. So here, Stonehenge, just really to remind us that even though it's a long time ago, they were not stupid. Yeah, we often tend to think, we often tend to think that people a long time ago were stupid. They were not. They were actually quite sophisticated. That's it, what it looks like close up. The Celts, we know a little more about the Celts. And here is a picture of Celtic drinking horns. These are for drinking. I don't know what they're drinking. They were the people then who were in Britain when the Romans arrived. When the Romans arrived, the Celts are the dominant population. They're on the ringy coats, they're on the helmets of the Celtic peoples before the arrival of the Romans. So, let's have a look at the question of when did the Romans arrive and why? And what did the Romans do for us? Was the Roman invasion a good thing for the people who lived there or not really? Well, like most things in history, Rome is contradictory. And so on the one hand, you have tremendous advances in building roads, aqueducts, and so on. On the other hand, most of the population were not allowed to use the roads and did not get the water from the aqueducts. It was to serve a minority. Under the Roman Empire, people who live in towns are an elite. Most of the work and the production is in the countryside. It's very much an agricultural nation. And so the towns are mostly full of either the landowners or their groups of people who organize the consumption of the rich and building theaters, baths, and so on. We will look at that in a moment. Many of Britain's major cities, London, Manchester, and York, were founded by the Romans. Yes, this is a Londinium, Mamucium, and Eburacum. This is London, Manchester, and York. Now, of course, if the Romans did introduce very impressive roads, which are still used today, the A1 from London to Edinburgh is exactly in the same place as the Roman Road. In fact, we call it the Roman Road, just as a nickname. But at the same time, of course, it's a society of tremendous exploitation and unbelievable cruelty. The most famous example, of course, is the gladiators. And gladiators were present in Roman Britain, just like they were in Rome. And this is really something extremely impressive. If you're a rich person and you organize a party, you organize the games, you are considered to have more prestige according to the number of slaves who will be killed. Yeah? And so you say, I'm organizing a big games and 50 slaves will be killed. It's written in the invitations. And your friends say, when I had the games, 100 slaves were killed. Yeah, so the situation. Of course, the slaves would be, in Britain, the slaves would mostly be the Celtic people, the local people. And in general, across the empire, most of the slaves are either conquered peoples, when you defeat another enemy, or sometimes families who are very poor will sell their children into slavery because they have nothing to eat. Yeah. So, not fun. Not necessarily a fun place to live. Here are the something completely different. That's the map of the tribes of England before the arrival of the Romans. In fact, you can't see the names of them, but they had different names. Here we have the gladiators. Can I have the gladiators, please? Gladiators. There you go. This is in Rome itself. This is the Circus Maximus, which you can still see today, but it's not in very good condition. And it's a huge building for the games, for the gladiators and the running and fighting between elephants and bears. That was another big show, fighting between elephants and bears, a good show. And you can see that it is extremely luxurious. It is absolutely ginormous, yes? This is in Rome. This is in Rome, yeah. This is the Circus Maximus. I have seen it, but most of it's destroyed, yeah. There's just a little bit left. The Circus Maximus. And this was sometimes when they had long games here, they had 500 slaves dying. No problem. Yeah. Okay. This is not a real gladiator. This is Kirk Douglas, I think. And there is a drawing of a gladiator. Of course, the famous moment when shall I kill him or shall I not kill him? Yes. Put your thumbs up. Put your thumbs down. It's really a very very violent, very very violent society. So that's the other side of it. Elephants fighting bulls. Now, of course, I have another example here. In 79 BC, the emperor in Rome introduced a new show for the games. And what they did is they took a criminal and they they got a bear to eat the criminal alive. This is a show. Good show, huh? Let's go and watch a criminal being eaten by a bear. Yeah, they did not have the same values that we have today. I'm assuming that you do not generally organize the eating of people by bears. Okay. Now, of course, there were many slave revolts. The slaves did not accept this all the time. There were many slave revolts. The most famous, of course, was the revolt under Spartacus, where for 2 years a slave army defeated some of the best armies that Rome had to offer. Of course, at the end, the slaves were defeated, and they were hung. Every 100 meters along the road from Rome to some distant place was a hung slave to tell people that this was not such a good idea. Okay, so Rome is a society built on war. The reason that the economy works is because it expands. You find a new place, and you take all the riches. You defeat the people, and that basically the Roman Empire can only survive as long as it expands, because it is not a society which increases productivity very much. But mostly the productivity doesn't change very much. So what about Britain? Well, 50 years before Christ, sorry, not at all, 50 years after Christ, you get the question of Britain. And Britain is important. Britain is the last big, glorious triumph of Rome. Conquering Britain, or almost conquering Britain, is the last great victory of the Roman Empire. In 41 AD, Caligula, the Roman Emperor, is assassinated, and there are two candidates to replace him, and the one who wins is Claudius, but he is not in a very stable situation, and you have a whole period of political insecurity and a series of revolts. Claudius is very worried he will lose power again, and what does he do? Two things he does. The first thing he does is he increases the wages of the soldiers. So always a good idea, just to make sure they don't change their mind about who should be emperor. And secondly, he invades Britain, because war on Britain would give Claudius the prestige he needs to stabilize his position as emperor. At the time, Britain was considered to be an extremely barbaric place with nothing approaching civilization. 40,000 soldiers invade Britain. They are victorious, 40,000 soldiers. So by modern standards, that's a small army. At the time, this is a very big army, yes? 40,000, 40,000. Yet numbers are always difficult at the beginning. 40,000, count on to me. It's an important victory. The emperor immediately goes to Britain and to show how important he is, and then he goes all around Italy on a triumphal tour, to tell everybody about the wonderful victory over Britain, and when he has a new baby boy, he names his son Britannicus. Yeah, it's a very important symbolic victory for the Roman Emperor Claudius. So what do they do once they arrive in Britain? Well, the Romans follow their traditional tactics, the very traditional tactics of the Romans, which is incorporate the elite. Yeah, that's one of the interesting things about the Roman Empire is that racism does not exist. When they arrive, they defeat a new people. They will integrate the leaders as full rights Roman citizens, and this is the method. Yeah, integrate the elite, and of course, if you're not part of the elite, well, you just have to keep working very hard. That's life. And this was not so easy. Well, on the one hand, the elite were not unhappy to be integrated. It was good being a Roman citizen. Yeah, there's a lot of the army would protect you. Romans would bring a wonderful urban life, which was much more exciting and interesting than the rural life beforehand. The Romans kept order. So the aim of the Romans was to take the British chiefs, the traditional tribal chiefs, and changed them into Roman gentlemen landlords. This was not so easy. For example, the old British chiefs were accustomed to carrying their weapons with them all the time, the axe and the sword. And if anybody is rude to you, well, you just cut off a bit of their ear or something. And this was not the idea of the Romans. The Romans wanted peaceful town life. And it was a long period when they could accustom the warlords to peace and leisure. So what did they do? They built temples for the different gods, piazzas, baths, and so on. A huge wave of lavish building, very luxurious buildings in the towns of Britain. This was typical after a Roman invasion. Yeah, and really the elites say, well, we've been invaded, but it's not so bad, really. Yeah, they were rapidly incorporated. However, it was not necessarily so easy, and I will tell you in a moment, the Romans did not succeed in conquering all of Britain. So, this is just a photograph I found. These are the amphorae. This is what you use for trade. They are full of wine or olive oil or grain, and that's just a picture I found. Now, little by little, it was possible for the Romans to have a less militarized society in Britain. There was the peace in England. However, not necessarily for the rest of the country. And this is a statue of Boudica. And Boudica is the leader of a revolt against the Romans from what is today Wales, Le Pays de Galles, what is today Wales, a big revolt. And what's interesting is that it's a woman leader of the Celtic revolt, yeah, a lady leader. It's the Joan of Arc of Wales. But in 61 AD, she almost won, but she didn't win. She lost. For 30 years, there was war in the West. Then, the revolt of Boudica was one moment in 30 years of war of the Romans against the peoples of the West. A confederation of local tribal chiefs in Wales, joined by some of the English chiefs, and they would generally use guerrilla tactics. They knew that if they had a direct confrontation in a battle, they couldn't win against the Roman army, which was the best technology. So they used guerrilla tactics to attack. Now, the Romans were very interested in... could you stay with us, please? Thank you. The Romans were very interested in Wales because in Wales there was gold, silver, lead, copper. Il y a du plomb et du cuivre, c'est les derniers deux, si vous n'avez pas le vocabulaire technique. Yeah, gold, silver, lead, copper in Wales, but the agriculture was not very interesting. I don't know if you know Wales, it's kind of mountainous. Not big mountains, it's not the Alps, but it's not very good for agriculture. It's very good for sheep, but there are no sheep at this time. Okay. And this is a general tendency across Europe that the Roman Empire continues and stops at the mountains. The Roman Empire continues and stops at the deserts of northern Africa. The Roman Empire continues and stops at the forests of North Germany. Because the Roman Empire can only survive if there is enough agriculture to collect a lot of taxes. Because if you have a big army, you need a lot of taxes. Il faut beaucoup d'impôts. And if there is no agriculture, you cannot make people give what is necessary for your army. And this is one of the reasons why the Romans had great difficulties occupying Wales and Scotland. Because the agricultural productivity was not so high and the cost of the army would probably be higher than the money you would receive from taxes in growing food on mountains, which is not very easy. And this is a general rule across Europe. So let's have a look at the map. Here you have a map. You have here... here you have the wars of the 40s, les années 40, du premier siècle. Here, from 40 to 70, war in Wales. And after 70, you get war moving north, and they move gradually north. Here you have the covering of the occupation in 47, 65, 78. Yeah, so they move gradually up here. and up here, but they never reach the top. In fact, the Romans have a wonderful army, but against the Scottish, they will lose. Yeah, the Scottish will actually win. The north of Scotland was never occupied by the Romans, and the Scots are very proud of that even today. In the 80s, the Romans got furthest north, and over the next 30 years, they tended to move south again to somewhere around Newcastle. They were not successful in conquering Scotland. Why not? Well, they needed more troops, they needed more soldiers, and they couldn't have them because after 85, there were revolts against the Roman Empire in what is today Romania. There were other revolts in Europe, and so the emperor was not happy to send extra soldiers to Britain. The expansionism of the Roman Empire was gradually slowing down. It was gradually impossible to go any further. And for 100 years, the expansion is slower and slower. So, what do they do? Well, we have a new emperor, Hadrian. A new emperor, Hadrian. After 100 AD, a new emperor, Hadrian, and he has a different tactic. He realizes it is not possible to expand much more, and so he decides to make more secure frontiers. And in Britain, he will build a wall. He will not build a wall. He will ask somebody else to build a wall. And this is called Hadrian's Wall. And it is across the whole country to separate Scotland across and to defend Roman England from the dangerous Scottish people. And it's still here today. This is what is left of it today. You can walk along the whole of Hadrian's Wall today. That's Hadrian, H-A-D-R-I-A-N, Hadrian's Wall. So an impressive defence in stone. And this is not immediately successful, and they are obliged to abandon the Hadrian's Wall in 142. Over the next 100 years, they will advance, return, advance, retreat, and so on. And they are successful for a while. But every time, they need to bring more troops in from Rome. In 208, the Roman Emperor, the new Roman Emperor, Severus, comes to Britain and he hopes he will find a final solution for the British problem, a final way of victory against the Scots. And for 2 years, a big fight against the Scots, the Romans go far in the north and they have a particular tactic. This is Severus, the Emperor. He says, "Let no one escape utter destruction at our hands. Let not the infant still carried in its mother's womb, if it be male, escape from its fate." So the instructions to the soldiers are kill every man, every boy, every baby, if it's a boy. Yeah, so it's not, you know, this is not, the Geneva Convention was much later. Okay, when Severus dies, they are still not successful, and that will be the last attempt. Severus's attempt will be the last attempt. The Scots have won. Of course, they are not called Scots. The northern barbarians have won, and we have a period of relative peace. According to most historians, this is the golden age of Roman Britain, from 150 to 225 is the golden age of Roman Britain. Not so much war. They built new villas, yeah, the big Roman villas, the mosaics, the frescoes, the Roman roads, the waterways. However, we do need to remember that the Roman roads, you could only use them if you had permission from the military authorities. They were not for everybody. Yeah? And they were punctuated by big mansions where you could go and have a good meal and have a few slaves, you know, and just generally enjoy yourself. There is some economic progress. For example, the fenlands in the east of England are drained. Les marais sont asséchés for agriculture. They transform the marshes, les marais, to make it good agricultural land. And the Romano Celt government organises gold mining in South Wales and lead mining, les mines de plomb, in Derbyshire. Very big army still, 40,000 men in a permanent army. It's absolutely huge, absolutely huge. In fact, it's similar to the size of the British Army today, but the population is much, much smaller. And this means that the army requires a lot of food, a lot of supplies, a lot of luxuries for the officers. And many of the retired soldiers will integrate into English society. We can probably safely say that most people who live in Britain did not benefit from these wonderful luxuries and so on. We think that taxes were approximately 10%. That is to say, that everything you grow, you must pay 10% to the Romans. And also, sometimes you could be forced to join the army. Remember that the idea of volunteering to join the army is a very modern idea. Until the 18th century, the normal way to join the army was you drink too much and you wake up in the army. Yeah, this is a very, very dangerous thing to happen. But there are, of course, the temples to Isis, the temples to Jupiter, and so on. There were at least 1,000 country villas around Britain, the villa, the big luxurious mansions in the countryside. This is the important thing. And in the villa, there would be houses for the labourers, there would be a farm, mosaics, and so on. Now, in the 3rd century, donc dans les années 200, big crisis in Rome, from 180 to 192, there were a series of coup d'état in Rome. The Roman ruling class was very, very violent. This was quite typical. A Roman gentleman called Caracalla killed his brother and became emperor, and then was killed himself. This was like average. This was on trouve la politique aujourd'hui sanglante. Ça avait rien à voir. Even worse. Yeah. There was a mutiny on the Rhine, where today is Italy. And the mutiny, they murdered the emperor. And the next emperor, Thrax, was murdered by his own soldiers. Yeah, so this was a crisis. This is what you call a political crisis. Yeah. And over this period of 50 years, there were 40 emperors. Sur 50 ans, il y avait 40 empereurs. Some of them official emperors, some of them unofficial emperors, but nevertheless, absolute crisis. And at this moment, the Roman army in Britain represented 10% of the Roman army. So of all the Roman army in all the empire, 10% were in Britain. It was an important place at this time. And I think I have a map. No, I don't have a map. The map is too small. So, the next big event in Britain is a revolt in 286, a revolt by a gentleman called Carausius. And Carausius, so in a general context of revolts around the Roman Empire, we will have a British revolt and a British Roman Empire, Carausius. And here are the coins of Carausius, because, of course, they had to make coins to pay for things. What he does is he revolts against Rome and he occupies the north of Britain. He has a lot of local support because his policy is, let's not send the taxes to Rome, let's keep the taxes for the local elites. Yeah? And this is a successful policy. He has a lot of support, so he is the unofficial emperor of northern Britain. And it's interesting how he presents himself. He presents himself as joint emperor. He says to the elite in Britain, oui, aujourd'hui, nous avons deux empereurs, on est empereur conjoint, il y a moi, il y a lui qui habite à Rome, sauf que lui qui habite à Rome, il n'était pas d'accord. Yeah. So he tried to, and so he did all the traditional things which Roman emperors do, says, I am the son of this god and this god. And this was the normal thing to do, yeah. It was worse than Sarkozy. Yeah. Okay, the Kerosius, yes. I don't know if you can see that. Yeah, this is of course the lion. These are also coins of Carausius. Bizarrely enough, Carausius's coins had better gold, more gold in them, than the official emperor's coins. It was economically quite a success. This is later. Right, so this is the big revolt. And in 296, the new emperor in Rome invaded Britain with a huge army and defeated Carausius. Yeah, it only lasted for, how long did it last for? 10 years. For 10 years, the revolt of Carausius was successful, and then they were defeated by the Roman army. Now, at this time, we have another new emperor, 306, Constantine. And Constantine has a completely new idea. Instead of throwing the Christians to the lions, Constantine decides that Christianity should become the official religion of the Roman Empire. This is a huge difference. Remember, traditionally, the Romans had a dozen gods, Jupiter, Mars, help me, Isis, people like that. And, of course, the Celts had several gods as well. And Christianity is a new idea. There is only one God. Now, there are advantages to having only one God. I'm not talking about your religion. I'm just talking about religion in general. It's much simpler to have one God. One God represents a more ordered world. Remember, the very beginnings of religion, there is a God in every mountain, a God in every storm, a God everywhere, because the world is so difficult to understand. And the more that we understand the world, the more it seems logical that one God is represents a stable world. When you have 10 gods, they have wars between the gods. It represents an idea that we cannot understand or control the world. So it's a very powerful idea, having just one God. And there's another reason, that is the Roman Empire is in a terrible crisis and they need help. And the Christian Church is an international bureaucracy of people who can read and write, you know, the priests and the monks and so on. And so the Roman emperors at one moment say, this is a good alliance, let's make an alliance. We need these people who can read and write and count and calculate taxes and stuff like that. Christianity will become the official religion of the Roman Empire in 313. Like I say, probably the main advantage is the church intellectuals, the people who can read and write, and a powerful ideological machine. It's a very powerful idea. It's a very powerful idea. So what does Constantine do? This is Constantine. This is the Emperor Constantine, or it's a statue of the Emperor Constantine. Okay, and behind him you have the symbol of one of the symbols of Christianity. It's a Greek thing, the beginning of the end, or something like that. It's a symbol of Christianity. That means Christianity and nothing else. So what does he do? Well, Constantine organizes the redistribution of wealth in favor of the church. That is, he says, well, you know what, we're going to give lots of money to the church. We want the church to be a powerful institution that controls everywhere. And in particular, Constantine says, okay, the pagan temples, the temples who worship the other gods, they must be dissolved, and all the money, all the riches, the gold and so on, must go to the church. So it's an ideological and material reorganization. Secondly, after 313, being a Christian is a very good idea if you want a good job. Yeah? It's very similar to in Russia in 1950. If you were a member of the Communist Party, you got a good job. Very, very similar idea that if you want to rise up in the army or rise up in the administration, that you need to be a Christian. And so a lot of people who were not Christians before, they joined Christianity for these reasons. Of course, they could also have religious reasons, but there were a lot of material reasons. And how do we know this? Because one of the difficulties of Roman Britain is that a lot of the writings are, first of all, they don't have the same idea of history as we have, and so they have no problem inventing the stories. That's not a problem. Yeah? So the main ways we know things are by archaeology. The main thing that we know by archaeology, we're digging things up. And in particular, the archaeologists discovered that in this period, after 320, the new villas which are constructed in Britain, the villas which are constructed in the British countryside, they often have a Christian chapel. They have a little church inside the villa. Yeah, so this is a sign of the integration of the Christian church and the landowning elite. We also see Christian mosaics. I have a Christian mosaic here for you. Again, you can see the symbol. You can see the symbol of the P and the X. So, it is a good time to be a Christian in the 4th century. Just in time. I live in the south of France. I live in Agen. And the cathedral in Agen is named after Saint Capret, who was executed by the Romans because he was a Christian. Okay? He lived too early. 100 years later, it was a good thing to be a Christian in the Roman Empire. And in particular, we were lucky. The archaeologists were rather lucky on this question, because about... when was it? I think in the 1940s, they discovered the Water Newton hoard. There was a village called Water Newton. Water, like Water Newton. Like Newton. They discovered a whole series of treasures from this period, and that meant that they could they had more information about it. So this is the time of crisis in the Roman Empire in the third and the fourth century, and one of the solutions is to introduce Christianity as the official. As the official religion. Another solution was to divide Britain into two parts. Britannia Inferior, in the bottom. They all spoke with a Spanish accent at the time. And Britannia Superior, at the top. To make it easier to control, they divided Britain into two. We know that life was very difficult for the elites, because by the middle of the 4th century, by 350, there were over 75 stone-built fortresses. You know, there were 75 stone fortresses in Britain. For a long time, there was no need for fortresses in Britain because there was peace. And now you see the stone fortresses being built. And the other side of this was that you are having the arrival of the very first invaders. Now, next week we're going to look at the invaders, but the very first invaders were already arriving in the 3rd and 4th century, and one of the ways we know this is because the towns on the east coast have more important fortifications. They are stronger with bigger stones at this period. And I think I have a map. Yeah, here we have a map of Roman Britain then, about 410. So this is almost the end. Yeah, this is almost the end. The Romans are almost ready to go home. You can see that now they have divided into more sections. They've divided it into more sections to make it easier to complete. This is London, York. I can't, I can't actually read it yet. Okay, and that's more or less the end of the story, because it's... Yes? Pourquoi? Okay, so here you can see the most important towns. Manchester, there's York up there, Lincoln, and these are still important towns today, of course. J'ai bien fait de ne pas être technicien. These are the other important towns. This one is the best known ones today. If you're lucky enough to be in Britain and you want to look for Roman ruins, Bath is the place to go, which at the time was called Aqua Solis, which I think means the waters of the sun, which is very funny because if you say, oh, I need water and sun, I'll go to England. Maybe, yeah? Okay. But Bath was a very, very rich centre for leisure at the time. And that's more or less the end of the story, because what happened is the Romans were obliged to abandon Britain because of the attacks on the empire in Rome. Yeah, they were forced to abandon Britain. And they left behind them then Romano-Celt society, a Romano-Celt society, that's what we call it. It's Celtic, but with a big Roman influence. And for a couple of hundred years, life will be very different. In fact, it's what we used to call, traditional historians called it the Dark Ages, l'époque obscure. Now, we know today it was not so obscure. The reason we called it the Dark Ages is because we didn't know much about it. But we do know that life in towns is declining. Towns are not becoming very important. You see, we must be careful not to have too modern a point of view on this. Today, we consider towns as automatic. Of course, towns are important, of course. But at the time, towns are a new idea, which were a place for the elite to consume the surplus, and the vast majority of the population had no interest in towns and did not necessarily think they were a good thing. And so when the Romans leave, there is a decline in the towns, and they will, for 400 years, the towns are in decline. I think I have one last picture for you, and then that's all for today. Oh yeah, this is another. This is just another piece of treasure from the Walter Newton hoard, and again we have the same symbol, which goes around the world. Okay, that's all we have time for today, or that's all I have notes for today. Next week I'm going to be looking at invasions from the east, the Angles, the Saxons, the Jutes, all coming from Norway, Denmark, the north of Germany, and they have a different tactic than the Romans. They don't incorporate the local population, they kill them. Okay, see you next week.